Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, running nerds, it's Kyle Merber, and if you're listening to this podcast, then there's a high likelihood that you love track and field. In that case, I encourage you to subscribe to the Lap Count newsletter. It's my newsletter, helping fans stay up to date with all the thrilling action and biggest stories in the world of track and field, delivered right to your inbox every Wednesday morning. It's free. It takes less than a minute to sign up at thelapcount.com, and I think you'll enjoy it. Here's this week's newsletter, read by Chris Chavez.
Before we get into it, this week's newsletter is brought to you by Olipop. When Olipop found out Sidious Mag was going to be at Nationals this weekend, they sent us boxes on top of boxes of cans to hand out. And the runners came to grab them like moths to a flame. That's because if anyone can enjoy the gut-healing properties of a prebiotic soda, then it's a health-focused crowd of runners. Aren't we all desperately looking for an excuse to still be able to enjoy the sweet taste of ginger ale, vintage cola, cream soda, and other soft drink classics without the guilt of overindulging on sugar? That's why it's the runner soda. Use code SIDIOUS25 at checkout for 25% off non-subscription orders when you visit drinkolipop.com today. That's SIDIOUS25 at drinkolipop.com. Lap 158. Let me get your number. The Best of Boston, presented by Kyle. Look no further than the medal table at any world championships to understand why the NCAA is the ultimate pipeline into the pro ranks, as 36% of all medalists in Glasgow used eligibility. It's our minor league system, except if the Long Island Ducks could occasionally beat the Yankees. To qualify indoors, athletes really only have to be good at one thing, time trials. To win indoors, athletes need to be good at another, winning. Here are my seven big winners of the NCAA Indoor Championships. The queen of the boards, but not hydration.
A new lifetime best and another new meet record for Parker Valby of Florida. 10 points for the Gators in the 3,000.
Two races, two wins, two record-breaking performances.
The greatest cross-country champion of all time might be open for debate, but if you're talking about the indoor 5K, there's only one answer, and that is Parker Valby. She enjoyed some pacing assistance when setting the NCAA record of 1456.11 at BU in December. That was no longer necessary this past weekend, closing her last 1600 meters in 437. Valby put on a clinic, going as far as lapping women about to be named to the same All-American team. Her winning time of 1452.79 narrowly missed the Olympic standard, which seems like the next box left for her to tick. It was the same story in the 3K, except with a bit more patience, as Valby allowed others to stay close for a while before running away to finish in 8:41. Great performances, but they pale in comparison to her off-track antics. Parker continues to have fun handling the onslaught of questions, praising the hydrating powers of kombucha and revealing that she doesn't really drink water while holding a water bottle.
So I've been drinking kombucha since fifth grade, everyone. Fifth grade. Okay, I started the trend. Everyone started hopping on the trend like a few years ago. But I've gotten so many people on it. But anyways, I don't really drink water. Like, I don't hydrate very well. And I drink kombucha like at least like three a day. My parents got a whole paycheck because I just get a Whole Foods and just keep buying kombucha. But yeah, I think it's actually really secretly hydrating because I never, like, besides cross country nationals, I did catch a cramp there, but like, I was fine today. I drank three today.
Valby said that the greatest 5,000 meter performance in collegiate history was a 6 or 7 out of 10 on the effort scale. 4,000 meters of anarchy.
Just doesn't have a response. It's going to be the Cougars winning the DMR, followed by Notre Dame. Florida is going to get third, important 6 points for the Gators. 10:51.40, they just missed the meet record.
We love the relays for their chaos, and aside from the high school 4x200, which is much too dangerous to be contested by professionals, the distance medley is most full of surprises. The women's race was uprooted by a fall that took out 75% of the field, and as much as that sucks for basically everyone, it definitely made things interesting. But in classic 1600-meter form, the leaders let the whole race back in it anyway. So kudos to BYU anchor Riley Chamberlain for the timely kick, closing in 4:27 for the win. As far as the most made-up events in track, the ranking probably goes something like this. Number 5, the one-hour run. Number 4, the DMR. Number 3, the steeplechase. Number 2, the mixed 4x4. And number 1, the shuttle hurdle relay. A four-lap tango to remember.
Michaela Rose can feel her coming up on her shoulder. What does she have left in the tank after leading this entire race? Whitaker goes wide, and she's going to take the title. Juliet Whitaker with a new meet record.
This was the deepest 800-meter field in collegiate history, so anyone could have won this and been considered a big winner of the week. Michaela Rose put the hurt on for 750 meters and dared anyone to come with her. But Juliet Whitaker of Stanford is the truth, and she made the late pass to take it in 159.53. Not the same old Young.
It's going to be Nico Young completing the double, 5,000 meters Friday night, 3,000 meters tonight. And he wins it with a meet record, 741 flat, now 741.01.
As the founding patriarch of the most dominant high school program in history, there was nothing that Nico Young could not win. But with historic performances come heaps of expectations, and NAU is not the type of program where one would be able to hide from the limelight. Almost immediately, it seemed like the transition to the big boy races would be seamless as his talent shined through to finish fourth at the NCAA Cross Country Championships as a freshman. Since then, however, despite collecting 9 All-American certificates, the NCAA title, which it had seemed inevitable, had yet to come. The unfair narrative pushed by Instagram comment sections was that Nico could not win. Well, setting the collegiate record of 12:57 earlier this season seemed to only up the ante. Mind you, nothing Nico or Coach Mike Smith ever said would hint that they'd felt any sort of pressure. After closing his final 1600 meters in 3:59 to win the 5K in 13:25 with a comfortable 2-second victory, there were no tears of happiness or indication that this was a huge monkey off of his back. Then again the next day, when the big move was made to close the last 600 meters of the 3K in 1:24 to break the proverbial tape in 7:41, it was still all business. Whether it's after the highest of highs or the lowest of lows, Coach Mike Smith and his disciples remain like water.
Sometimes it just takes that long. You know, I'm always kind of in my head as a coach thinking about strength and speed, and sometimes what we see at the end of races is someone's just not strong enough to access their speed. You know, he's now strong, and he's always had this leg speed, but you've got to be strong enough to access it. And so in some ways what looks like is this speed is there's less damage accrued by the late stages of these races, and he can actually get into his leg speed now. But also mechanically he's just putting so much force down into the ground. If you can hear it in his strike, and he's confident too. I mean, that's confident. Nico Young is scaring, man. The stuff he says to me, I'm like, yeah, he's confident.
If there was an expectation for tears of joy and a public display of relief now that Nico was an NCAA champion, we never saw it. Ultimately, we projected this pressure onto him. But now Nico Young will let us rest. Making the jump. If there was going to be a favorite coming into the high jump, then the collegiate record holder, Lamara Diston, should have been a safe bet. But that's why we have the meet. Arkansas's Rachel Glenn had a personal best of 1.93 meters from when she won the 2021 outdoor title. And yet, she cleared 2 meters to tie the collegiate record and win the whole thing in Boston. Back then, she was competing for South Carolina, but she left over the university's lack of support for her interest in acquiring NIL deals. The redshirt junior can do more than just jump, having run 23.03 for 200 meters and 8.14 for the 60 hurdles this indoor season. Only she and Vashti Cunningham have the Olympic standard, and so the odds of her making the team are quite good, but that doesn't mean she wouldn't make one hell of a multi-athlete as well. Texas, technically speaking, he's good.
Jones wins the heat and will win the title. 20.
Do you know what's better than winning one NCAA title? 2. Well, three if you count Texas Tech's team title. Terrence Jones repeated his 60-meter title running 6.54, but it was adding the 200 meters to his repertoire that doubled his value. His winning time of 20.23 was not bad for a guy whose first official indoor full lap was this year, and mastering the turns was something that we watched in real time, as I imagine there weren't too many bank tracks in his native Bahamas. Luke at me now.
Who seems twice as hard? How is it you got it done?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not easier the second time around. Still have to put in the same work week in and week out. So, you know, I knew what it took to win. And so, you know, every day I showed up to practice with that champion mentality, put in the work all year to get to this point.
And how'd this play out for you? Because you were right, there where you need to be the whole time, but that's a group of sharks.
Yeah, I mean, I took the lead early just because I knew positioning is so important, and I was getting challenged every lap. Someone was coming up on my shoulder, but just had to keep fighting to hold them off, and was able to just get all the way home.
Yeah. Congratulations, another mile title for the guys in Washington.
If I could go back in time a couple years to write a book about the Washington Milers, then I'd welcome the accusations of copying Running with the Buffaloes author Chris Lear's ideas for how good it had been. As a group, they have certainly made a collective name for themselves, but now scouts are going to start appreciating Luke Houser for the individual that he is. Sometimes it takes two NCAA titles for the world to wake up. The big factor now is that he's proven that he can run fast, with a personal best of 3:51, and win when it's slow. On paper, Houser's a better cross-country runner than he is an 800-meter runner, but winning his NCAA titles going 4:03 and 4:01, he's proven the ability to control a race from the front. Though the thing that impressed me most was that less than an hour later, he was on the line for the 3K and at the front of the race. He stayed with the pack for about 2,200 meters before falling off. You just can't teach that sort of grit. Hashtag get that value up. Pick a number, any number. Which would the pros take? If I'm a sucker for two things, it's good sports marketing and beer. The two often go hand in hand, although not in track and field. Fortunately, we can look to women's hockey for some inspiration about how to get creative. Molson's new See My Name campaign moves the players' names on their jerseys from the top to beneath the number so that they're no longer blocked by hair. Instead, the beer company's logo will be partially hidden. And the commercial notes, Molson is covering our name so hers can be seen. The PWHL players do not get paid all that differently from the majority of track athletes. Player salaries range from $35K to $80K. The Upstart League is off to a strong start, beginning with 2.9 million Canadians watching the first game on TV, and a recent game between Minnesota and Montreal played to a crowd of over 13,000 fans. At its peak, more people watch track and field, but there are much stricter limitations on everything, including uniforms and the willingness of other leagues to innovate, and so work to bring in new partnership dollars should be emulated. Perhaps in addition to relaxing some overzealous restrictions, track and field could better position itself among women's pro leagues, which are gaining a lot of steam at the moment. Who else has a perfectly equitable split between participants, viewership, attention, and money? I digress. Despite the individual nature of the sport, athletes' uniforms are exactly that, just a uniform. It's a missed opportunity to take advantage of the most unique aspect of the sport and allow some individual expression. How are fans expected to have an allegiance to one athlete versus another when they all look the same? The easiest way to differentiate and identify the clones wearing whatever this year's jersey color would be is to add numbers to the back. That thought exercise had me wondering about what numbers the top professionals would add to the back of their uniforms if given the chance. So I asked them. Here's some of their responses. Courtney Wayman, 20. It was her grandpa's baseball and basketball number when he was little, and she used it for her soccer and basketball number growing up. That's why her handle is CourtASport20. Yard Nagoose, 3. He said, has always been my favorite number and feels right. I don't have a serious reason, but 3 is the one with the treasure chest. Trayvon Brummel, 7, because it represents completion. Nikki Hiltz, 95. I'm a big fan of Cars and Lightning McQueen, and that's his race car number. Fiona O'Keefe, 37 is a shortened version of the address of our house growing up, and I also like that it's a prime number. I also just learned that it's the smallest magic square. Sinclair Johnson, 13, because it's mostly thought to be an unlucky number, but it's my lucky number since I was born on the 13th. Olin Hacker, 2. It was my number in soccer growing up. I don't know why I picked it. initially, but it may have had something to do with the lowest numbers being the smallest sizes, and I needed the extra small. Shari Hawkins, 7. A number for each of the events in the HEP. I'll get lucky number 7 while also reminding everyone how many events I have to train for every day. Abby Goldstein, I'd say 215. It's affiliate area code Rise Up. Although I guess that's too big, I chose my soccer number to be 23 because it was David Beckham's. Eric Holt, 4. Since that's my favorite number, it's the number of letters in my first and last name, and every time I get a bib that's 4 or a factorial of it, it's a good omen. Anna Hall, 7. I have it tattooed on my hand. It was my dad's football number, so I picked it up in every sport growing up. Plus, I do 7 events, and I want to score 7K.
I hear the Maryland Track Club cheering for him. There goes the fireworks. Keep your eyes on the time. What is it going to be? 45.71, unofficial.
The average high school kid isn't voluntarily reading an extra 4,000 words a week, so the odds are that the majority of you reading this newsletter are much too old to be dialed into the prep running scene. All you know is that every dude breaks 4 minutes in the mile now, and that makes you a little bit resentful. Don't feel bad. These kids will never know the joy of riding a bike around the neighborhood without their parents quietly monitoring them via AirTag. This year's New Balance National Indoor Meet was as good of a high school meet as you'll ever attend. So good, in fact, that many of you have already heard some of the results, especially this one. If there could only be one MVP from the meet, it would be Quincy Wilson. His performance transcended beyond the Snapchat saying, "Oh my God, this kid just ran 45.76 for 400 meters. It was the subject of at least one group chat I'm on comprised entirely of olds. We don't necessarily need to add any additional qualifiers to make a national high school record any more impressive, but I'm going to do it anyway. This kid is 16 years old and he's only a sophomore, but he's hardly a neophyte. Wilson is no stranger to the scene. He's been racking up AAU titles from an early age, and last year at this same meet, he ran 46.67, which put him on my radar. During the freshman outdoor season, he split 45.07 at the Penn Relays, and then clocked an open 45.87 at the U20 Championships. Now, he's coming for the best of the best and not holding back about his desire to compete with the guys that he once looked up to.
I've looked up to him for a long time, but now I think it's my turn because I'm coming up to the upper generation. Now I can't wait to get on the – I hope I can be able to make the team and things like that because – Right now, I was looking forward. I think I may go to the trials this summer.
As soon as you cross the finish line, I swear I Googled, what's the age limit?
You have to be at least 16.
You gotta be 16. So you're right.
It seems ridiculous to suggest that a kid who has to sit in algebra class the day after rewriting the record books could be a challenge to world champions, but times don't lie. Noah Lyles split 45.68 on the 4x4 in Glasgow, but in a more apples-to-apples comparison, Quincy's time would have placed him 5th at the NCAA meet the day before on the same track. What is running such fast 400-meter times at such a young age mean for his future? Should we be concerned about Wilson's early success? Taking a look at another teen sensation, Sydney McLaughlin-Lavroni made her first Olympic team at 16 years old and has obviously panned out well. It may be a tad risky to assume all one-lap record holders will become the next Sydney McLaughlin, but at least she's proof of the concept. The previous high school boys record holder didn't enjoy a lengthy career, but not for the typical reasons we worry about with prodigies. LZ Coleman ran 45.92 at the Simplo Games 20 years ago, but wound up kicked off the Mississippi State squad for disciplinary reasons and spent what should have been the prime years of his career in and out of jail. Not a whole lot we can extrapolate from that unfortunate outlier case. In watching Wilson run, my first impression is, man, he looks smooth. My second is, I would definitely ask him for his ID before selling him tickets to an R-rated movie. And in talking to him, I was super impressed by how humble and focused he came across and how prepared for the trajectory of stardom he seems to be. As a newsletter man, I hate to stake my reputation on the grand proclamation like, this kid is the next big thing. But also as a newsletter man, I need the subscription, so this kid is the next big thing. Some other top high school performances from the meet include Daniel Simmons of American Fork in Utah destroying the national 5K record, running 13:38, mostly solo at the Reggie Lewis Center. If there were any doubts about this track from kids who are too young to remember Craig Mottram, then this answers it for them. Brianna Selby held off Adeja Hodge in the 60 meters, winning in 7.19, which would have been good for fifth at the NCAA Championships. Hodge doubled back to win the 200 in 22.96. Drew Griffith broke Ed Cheserek's high school 2-mile record earlier this season, but it didn't officially count because it was on an oversized track. Well, 8:34.91 this time around did the trick and then some. Patrick Hilby is one of my new favorite runners because this dude went out in 24.5 for the first 200 meters of the 800 and still held on to win the national title in a new personal best of 148.47. When Donovan Brazier ran his American record of 144.21, he went through in 24.7. College versus high school nationals. One of the most overlooked records of the weekend was the trip from my home in Westchester County, New York, to Boston. I completed the trip in under 2 hours and 50 minutes on Thursday night. Considering that I commute 3.5 hours round trip for my office job 3 days a week, this was a breeze, which is a sentiment surely shared by college coaches and their operations managers from across the country. It is a bit easier and cheaper to book flights for 15 people to Boston Logan than Fayetteville's nearby Northwest Arkansas National Airport. There was a lot of excitement for the NCAA meet to be held at the epicenter of the indoor track world and in a major Northeast city for the first time ever. Having previously attended the New Balance Indoor Grand Prix and the New Balance Nationals at the track at New Balance, I had high hopes for the excitement and buzz that would follow the athletes around the track. In my dream world, it would have been the enthusiasm of Patriots Day contained under a roof with 10 times the number of kisses. Hearing that the crowd was sold out well in advance of the event only served to amplify these sky-high expectations. And while the races were undoubtedly awesome with the crowd exploding for the end of the men's 4x4 and the women's 800, the atmosphere overall was a bit dry. And returning on Sunday for the high school meet further confirmed that feeling. The kids, the literal kids, not the young adults of the NCAA, had music blasting, introductions under dim lights, flames at the finish line, Nickelodeon green slime falling from the rafters. Okay, I'm just kidding on that one. And on-field commentary and hype. But the most discernible contrast between the two was the pace of the meet. And I'm not talking about the pacing lights. The high school meet just kept going out of the need to get through a number of heats. There just wasn't any dead time. Something was always happening. Now, having breaks between races is okay. In fact, it's preferred. That's a huge opportunity to build anticipation and to provide commentary and analysis. If done properly, this alleviates the need for the broadcast to fill the silence with story time and instead focus on the action viewers are watching. Ultimately, the issue is that the NCAA doesn't consider track a spectator sport. They'd never put out the equivalent product for basketball or football, which is understandable since that's where the money is. But that doesn't mean some small tweaks can't be made. A playlist consisting primarily of Drake, for instance, really dials up the "this is a sporting event" vibe in the room. That would instantly elevate the experience. If there logistically needs to be 10 minutes to set up the 400 after the 60 meters, then let fans on site hear the interviews being broadcast on ESPN with those winners before giving the next athletes an opportunity to run out and wave to the crowd. And if the schedule is segmented by gender, then what are fans going to do for the 1.5 hour break between the end of the men's meet and the beginning of the women's? Okay, maybe that's a little bit too much to add in Drake. Here's what else you need to know from this past week. Sada Williams, the World Championship bronze medalist in the 400 meters, set a new personal best of 22.59 for Barbados national record. Elizabeth Leachman, the sophomore from Texas, ran 15:28.89 to break Caitlin Toohey's high school national 5K record. The NYC half is on Sunday at 7 a.m. Eastern Time, and you can watch it at abc7ny.com. The D2 Nationals mile champion Caleb Futter of Grand Valley State put on a tactical clinic, winding up the field beautifully and closing in 1:20 for his last 600 meters. Don't be fooled by the 4:18 winning time. He did run 3:58 earlier this season. Hashtag investors, possibly you. Vanessa Frazier has signed a professional contract with Saucony, which is exciting, of course, for her. But is this a precursor to Saucony getting back in the game? It feels like it's been a while, and the company has gone through many changes recently, including a recent move to Michigan. Brooks Running CEO of 23 years, Jim Weber, has stepped down and is handing over the reins to Dan Sheridan, who started as a tech rep 25 years ago. He bought me a hot dog from the concession stand in Budapest last summer, so this sort of feels like a big win for me, but really it's important to have real runners who can appreciate the run specialty industry at the top of the pyramid. The next round of the Josh Kerr versus Jakob Ingebrigtsen saga will go down at the Pre-Classic on May 25th. We've put together a full timeline of their public display of affection. It's on the Sidious Mag Instagram page. Also announced in the field is Yared Nuguse, who might just win the whole damn thing. But if you're going to do a poster a la a boxing promo, then you have to just pick two fighters. Yuka Ando won the Nagoya Marathon in a personal best of 2:21.18, and although she fell short of the 2:18.59 needed to qualify for the Japanese Olympic team, she was still pleased with the effort. See, there's more to life than the Olympics. One last thing, you can watch the 10 on Saturday. Earlier races that start at 8:45 p.m. on FlowTrack with a subscription. The Olympic standards are 27 minutes for the men and 30-40 for the women. Currently, the only American with the time is Alicia Monson. This may as well be the Olympic trials, because if you don't get it there, good luck. Thanks so much to Olipop for sponsoring this week's newsletter. I drank an unbelievable amount of ginger ales this past weekend while covering track, which they fully make possible for all of us at Sidious Mag to do. So thanks to Olipop. This has been Chris Chavez reading Kyle Merber's The Lap Count newsletter. We'll see you next week.